I'm John Kroll. Today on No Limits, we're going to talk about the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department's practice of adapting officer recruitment and staffing in changing and challenging times. My guests are IMPD Deputy Chief Valerie Cunningham, Lieutenant Ida Williams of the recruiting unit, and Officer Elizabeth Flatter, a recent recruit. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits at WFYI.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. Now, this news. Welcome to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. Happy New Year to everyone. It's good to be back in the studio. Today we're going to be talking about how the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department is adapting officer recruitment and staffing in these changing and challenging times. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can email us at nolimits@wfyi.org, find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. Well, this studio now is one of the safest places in the city. I have three police officers sitting in here with me. They are Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department Deputy Chief Valerie Cunningham, Lieutenant Ida Williams of the recruiting unit, and Officer Elizabeth Flatter, a recent recruit. Welcome to all of you.
Welcome. Thank you, John. First of all, I'd like to thank you for having us here today. And obviously, we're hoping not only to have good conversation and answer people's questions, but to use this as a recruiting event because we're hiring.
Well, why don't we use that as the jump-off point? Because this is probably I've been doing this show now for more than 8 years, and this is the first time that not just the police department, but any agency of government has come on here and tried to use this as a way to find talent, to find people who will step in. You know, what prompted this kind of approach that, you know, is a little different? It's not something the city's done before. Should I start with you, Deputy Chief Cunningham?
Sure. I'm happy to start the conversation and hope that the phone lines are filling up as we're talking with people that are interested in joining our ranks. So it's no secret that the profession of law enforcement has shown a downturn nationwide in people being interested in joining us in this profession. You know, I consider this profession one of the greatest honors of my life to be able to serve in it and think it's a noble profession and a necessary one. You know, we're public servants. We need to be out there. Any way we can appeal to people that have that same like-minded feeling, we want them on this agency. And, you know, I'll turn it over to my lieutenant in charge of recruiting to kind of give her spiel out there to hopefully generate some interest. But we know that we have not had the applicants that we have seen in the past as far as the numbers. We're working on creative, different approaches to that. And I'm interested, as the conversation goes on today, to hear from one of our recent recruits, you know, what motivated her. And hopefully that inspires some other people that are out there listening to us.
Yeah, I'm curious about all of that. But I think probably for our listeners, it would help if we talked a little bit about what the problem has been. You know, I'm assuming in doing this, you're not just, you know, throwing spaghetti up on the wall to see what sticks, that there's a method to what's going on here. Lieutenant Williams, could you talk a little bit about, you know, presumably you've talked with people about what the reluctance is to go into law enforcement because, you know, if the numbers have dropped, why that might have been?
Well, again, I thank you for allowing us to come on and talk about what IMPD is doing as far as our recruiting efforts. And like the Deputy Chief mentioned, this is a national decline across the country. We're seeing this. And as we have conversations daily with other agencies, we're finding that, again, sometimes it's fear. Sometimes it's what they're seeing in the media. Sometimes, again, it's they're not seeing us early on. They're not seeing us as far as, first of all, with women. Some of our female numbers are down nationally of where we want them to be. And I know when I came on IMPD, there were more women on our agency that I think I could relate to. So I think that's one of the biggest challenges, too, is just getting ourselves out there, letting people see that we are here, we're hiring, our agency is hiring, and these are some of the things that we're doing to get in face in front of the community to let people know that our faces are here, we're here, and we're looking to hire you.
And I'm hearing one word here that I'm going to ask about. You keep referring to it as the agency rather than the force. Is that a deliberate, conscious choice? I'll go with you since you made the mistake of making eye contact, Deputy Chief Cunningham. Is that a conscious choice that people are making, or we're going to talk about this as an agency rather than choice? Because force suggests, has a different kind of connotation. An agency is something that helps people in theory.
We didn't come in here with a singular plan, I don't even know how I referred to it earlier, but, you mentioned the force. We can put a negative connotation on it, but some agencies are using that as a recruiting effort and basically motivating people by saying, be the force, meaning, be a force yourself, be a force for change, be a force for community involvement, developing community trust, basically using it as a positive motivator. The IMPD, we're a family and we're part of this community. This is our community that we serve. So agency, police force, police department, group, family, community member. I mean, we're all of the above. So if she kept saying the agency, I didn't notice it.
Well,
it wasn't
mentioned
planned.
You mentioned it, too. Okay. You said agency as well, which is what triggered. I guess the other part is I'm wondering, because you're saying this is a nationwide trend. And also, it's not confined to police departments. It's other parts of government. How much of this also could be? I mean, we have had now pretty close to a half a century of, not to put too fine a point on it, government bashing. The idea that the government can't or doesn't do anything right or to help people. I mean, police law enforcement officials, by definition, they're enforcing the law, are part of government. Are they taking the hit for some of this, do you think? I'll tell you what. I saw Lieutenant Williams looking at me. What are your thoughts?
As far as government taking the policing, absolutely, I think we are. I think what we're seeing in the media, I think sometimes the lack of the knowledge of what we do, I think we are taking a good hit on some of what's going on with the government.
Yeah, well, and I think more I was thinking as a political, every president since Richard Nixon has run against government. Government is always the problem, and it's Democrat or Republican. At some point, do people start saying, heck, I don't want to be part of that? Has that had some effect? Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I think if people sit back, and I agree with you, and a lot of that we go back to some of the reasons for the decline, and Lieutenant Williams mentioned media, right? Mm-hmm. So it's how we portray things and what gets out there. But by the same token, if somebody's having the worst day of their life, they know to pick up that phone and dial 911. Mm-hmm. So they know where that ultimate resource is. And that shows the necessity of having law enforcement in this profession around and having good people that respond to those calls for help. That's exactly what we're looking for. We want people on this agency that stand ready, that understand all the what I call interference out there. And I call that kind of all the static that you see in the news media, the things that pop up on Twitter. I mean, let's face it, social media now, we're connected all the time. Mm-hmm. So anything happens anywhere. You could say anywhere in the world, and it comes across there. And there's more negative reported, I think, than positive. But there's so many positive things that go on each and every day.
So, Officer Flatter, it sounds like you're bucking a trend here at some level. What drew you to this profession?
Well, first off, thank you, sir, for having us here.
I'm John. No, I'm not sir. I'm John. Okay.
I even call my son, sir. So.
Well, that's okay. It's... He's not here. Just call me John.
So I've always thought that law enforcement would be something that would be really awesome to be a part of. For me, it was a little bit different, though, in terms of I expected certain responses from people if I were to tell them, hey, I want to be a police officer. Mm-hmm. I am female. Mm-hmm. I wanted a family. And those were two of the biggest arguments that I expected to hear, even though I never voiced myself to give anyone the opportunity to even give that response. And so what it took was a lot of just determining in myself that, no, this is something that I think I could possibly be built for, and I'm tired of the stereotype and the trend, and I'm going to see what happens if I go for it. And I had people who were supporting me, and so I applied, and here I am.
And what do you find most satisfying about it?
The interactions with people. it's not all of what we do is not all of what the media portrays, typically. Mm-hmm. Yes, there are times that we have to act in ways that could be frowned upon. Mm-hmm. However, the vast majority of what I spend my shift doing is talking to people about why their day turned out the way that it did and how I can better affect that. It's not all of the talking down to and the intimidation that I think people these days tend to believe that we do. It's meeting people on their level and speaking to them the way that we really do want to be spoken to. I'm sure that that's not what we do 100% of the time, but that's definitely what the officers that I interact with and that I work with and myself, that's what we all do. We know we have each other's backs if something were to happen, but we're there for the people, and that's the way that we operate.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the new ways that the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department is adapting officer recruitment and staffing in these changing and challenging times. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. So let's talk a little bit about, and I'll start with Lieutenant Williams on this, about the new ways that you're going about recruiting now. And, you know, let's just give me an overview, and then we'll drill down from there. Other than, obviously, we've already mentioned one. You're going on the radio and and trying to leverage interest that way.
Well, absolutely. That's a big part of it. So we do a number of things, John. First of all, internally. We have a recruiting unit, but at the same time, we have 1,600-plus officers that we consider recruiters. Every officer on this job is a recruiter, and we use that. So we use our internal resources. But then again, we use our social media. We know this is the millennial generation, and they do a lot, and a lot is done through social media. So we're really utilizing our social media sites a lot more, whether it's Twitter, whether it's Facebook. And then again, coming on the radio, our marketing strategies such as our billboards. We use billboards and our bus tails on our Indigo buses. So we use a lot of those marketing tools to help us keep up with the recruiting trends and to make sure that we got the message out that IMPD was hiring. So those are a number of things. So, again, not just word of mouth, but social media and keeping us on the face of everything every day is what we're trying to do. And, again, we're trying to just get that information out. A lot of times we don't get applicants because they don't have the knowledge and the education mm-hmm. on what it takes to become a police officer. So making sure that we equip individuals with what our process is like and to let them know the changes, the current trends, and then again how to make sure that they are best equipped to be a recruit. So those are the kind of things that we're doing.
What are of these new forms of outreach, which sound like, you know, that you're using a much broader array of media to try to contact people. Which ones seem to have the deepest penetration? Or are you far enough into it yet to have data on that?
You know, we've Twitter, we're getting a lot of feedback from our Facebook and Twitter accounts. So, again, we're seeing a real uptick in those social media sites.
Okay, well, we're about to come up on a break here. So when we come back, I think we'll talk more about whether also the profile of the sort of people that you're looking to recruit to come into the profession has changed at all over time. If you are just joining us, we're talking about how the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department is adapting officer recruitment and staffing in these changing and challenging times. My guests are IMPD Deputy Chief Valerie Cunningham, Lieutenant Ida Williams, the recruiting unit, and Officer Elizabeth Flatter, a recent recruit. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking about the new ways that the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department is adapting officer recruitment and staffing today on No Limits. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Email us at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at wfyi. My guests are IMPD Deputy Chief Valerie Cunningham, Lieutenant Ida Williams of the recruiting unit, and Officer Elizabeth Flatter, who is a recent recruit. So I said before we went to the break that I want to talk a little bit about whether the profile of the folks, and actually Deputy Chief Cunningham and I were talking on the break here about just the ways that at least my perception has been from doing shows with sister and brother officers through the years. And, you know, Mayor Hogsett, for example, Mayor Ballard when he was the mayor, Troy Riggs in both of his capacities in law enforcement. And the impression I'd gained from all of those conversations is that that being a police officer has just gotten almost exponentially more complex and complicated than it would have been a generation or two generations ago. So I'll start with Chief, but I'd like to hear everybody's thoughts on this. Has that changed, the profile of the recruit you're looking for, the what constitutes the ideal police officer, and if so, in what ways? I'll start with Chief Cunningham.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm going to talk generally about the profession, and I'll let the other two dive down deeper for you. We'll kind of maybe step it down for you.
Okay.
So generally, over the past few decades, I think law enforcement as a profession has suffered some unintended consequences and negative perception in the community by not being able to meet their needs by these additional demands. When they call for a police officer now, it could be an issue with someone suffering from a mental illness, substance abuse, homelessness, food insecurity, and they expect still that officer to respond and be able to resolve that situation. And again, on the law enforcement profession, the way that we've trained in a paramilitary organization has been more towards the law enforcement end decades ago, mm-hmm. and we didn't hit those social needs. And so when the officers showed up and couldn't meet those needs, oftentimes we talk about criminal justice reform now, avoiding sending somebody to jail or the punitive part of it. We're doing a much better job in our training now and more cognizant of the fact that we are filling that gap between social services and law enforcement. So when we're looking for an officer, we're looking for an individual that is well-rounded, that's able to assess that in the field in a very short period of time with very little interaction with an individual to make sure that if they have committed a crime, that's dealt with. But if they have not, if they're suffering from a mental illness, a substance abuse, and a resource could be a better avenue to provide them with, that they direct them to that. So they have to have – it's unbelievable what we're asking of the individuals coming into this profession this day and time. And with that, I'll let you
– Lieutenant Williams.
I get this question a lot, John. What are we looking for? I don't see that we've changed much. I think some – key characteristics that is important is commitment. We're looking for that individual to be committed. We're looking for character, compassion. And I heard Elizabeth mention when she was talking communication. I think those four things are key in policing today. communication, like she was saying, you spend 99% of your day communicating. We run across people, again, that's on their, that could be their worst time, their worst days, and then they come across us. We have to be able to, again, demonstrate compassion, communication, and have character, and meet them where they are. So I think for me, those four things are just as important today as they were when I came on 29 years ago.
Hmm. Officer Flatter, you get the last word on this round.
So in this regard, I mean, my perspective is going to be a little bit different. I'm new to the department, and I've only been, you know, on the street itself for a matter of a couple of months. But something that I see is, and you kind of see it naturally come through in the application process and in the training process. But it's that concept of hard work, and you can't necessarily see all of that on the application. But like any other job, when we're out there, we need people we can count on to work with, people who are going to show up as, you know, our backup and our help. And that's, I don't know if it's necessarily something that they think they're tailoring to in the recruiting department, but they really are. The way that everything is set up, by the time you get to the end of it, you have learned, or should have learned if you'd been paying any attention, how to be that team player and that partner that can be depended on and can be relied upon. And so the people that I can see having success in the field that I've worked with so far are the people who have learned how to operate in out of that mindset that we're all on one team. And I think the way that everything is set up right now speaks to that.
Well, and I think some of where the question was getting pitched is that, particularly Officer Flatter, when I heard you talking earlier about how, you know, most of your day is spent talking with people and interacting, and you know, it sounded from your description like you were using what employers love to describe as the soft skills. You know, you're talking about a lot of communication, a lot of conflict resolution, a lot of things like that, which, let's face it, in the 60s and 70s, we wouldn't have thought of as necessarily skills that police officers needed to have. Now it sounds like that's every bit as much part of your equipment as the badge and the radio and the gun and all of that, you have to have those things. You know, let me put it this way. What do you think is the most important thing when you're coming into a situation that you have to do?
I think that...
Big question.
I was going to say, that has the potential to be a very broad spectrum type of question.
Well, it was intended to be. The show's called No Limits for a reason.
Safety mm-hmm. is first and foremost. We've got to, when we're coming into anything, we've got to know or be able to differentiate kind of where some of the different hazards could be, whether that's, you know, a person or oncoming traffic or, you know, something in that regard. But like you're speaking with communication, another big component of what we do on every situation that we go to is there is the piece of handling the moment that we got called for. But then there's also the piece of figuring out, and I pose this question multiple times during my work week, is how do I know I won't be back mm-hmm. when I leave here?
Or how did we get to this moment, too?
Right. Yeah. And so it then turns into a prevention conversation instead of just how do we fix now? It's how do we prevent this from happening again? So that communication piece is huge. We help people solve their problems, at least, you know, we can't necessarily do it permanently, but at least temporarily, to help them have enough time to cool off or to, you know, take care of whatever may have affected that moment. But the ability to help someone see what matters and what may not, and prioritize if there are kids involved in whatever the situation is, That's definitely a part of the conversation that we bring up. What do you want your kids to see? What do you want your kids to learn from this? Is it worth it to you for them to be here in this moment? And so we do try to draw on some of those different human aspects that I think we all have within us. And the ability to do that speaks to, I think, every time that we don't get called back to a disturbance, because we've, at least in some regard, whether that's having people split, you know, from the property or coming to some agreement verbally, we have assisted in that way, and that's what we're there for.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about the ways that the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department is changing officer recruitment and staffing to meet the challenges of these times. If you want to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, or you can do what one listener did and reach out to us via Twitter @WFYI. This listener writes, I heard your guests mention IMPD officers work in the community. Question, are officers and even civilian employees required to live in or relocate to Marion County? And if not, why not? Lieutenant Williams, I think that probably would go to you.
So I'm hearing the question is, do they have to relocate? They can.
Do they have to live in Marion County?
No, they just have to live within the seven adjoining counties. So Marion County and then the seven donut counties.
And then the donut, okay.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, and what is the reasoning for that?
Well, we want our citizens, obviously, to be able to see the officers that, you know, work in their community. I'm going to let the Deputy Chief Cunningham mention why do we have that.
Yeah, there are two parts, I guess. One would be, why would you have any sort of geographic restriction? But then the other is, if it's important to have them in the community, why not have them in Marion County exclusively? And I think she's kicking it upstairs, Deputy Chief Cunningham.
She's kicking it up. So we do have a residency requirement of a Marion County residence for our civilian employees for the city of Indianapolis. For our sworn law enforcement officers, it's actually in state law that they can live one county out from Marion County and be on IMPD.
Oh, so it's a legislative thing.
Yeah, and one of the reasons, when you look at the demographics and you look at the census here in Indianapolis, they talk about a metropolitan area, and they extend out beyond the county borders for our populace, essentially to say what kind of metropolis Indianapolis is, to draw talent here for a variety of fields. Our officers, just like anyone else that lives in the donut counties, comes to the center city for a lot of their resources. Also, I think was recently shown when we had the horrific school shooting up in Hamilton County, some of our officers were some of the first to respond. Mm-hmm. So our ability to the fact that we have a take-home car program, with our officers having take-home cars and they have the ability to be mobile from their residences, allows them off-duty then, should we have an event, a catastrophic event like that, to be some of the first responders and provide that aid that we've sworn to this community. And we consider, I think if, you know, I were to ask you, if somebody lives just north of Marion County up there, are they part of the Indianapolis community? I think they would identify themselves as being from Indianapolis.
If you're just joining us, we are talking about the ways that the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department is changing recruitment practices and staffing in order to meet the challenges of these times. If you want to join the conversation, you can do what a listener named John has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. John, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello. What's on your mind?
Well, I was listening to the program, and I myself, my wife and I are foster parents, so you were talking earlier about having the officers working with people who might be facing some sort of adverse condition, like a mental illness, or they might be having like a starvation or something along those lines. Does the IMPD train their officers to work with children in similar circumstances? Like I said, myself as a foster parent, one of the big things that they train us to deal with is treating kids who have gone through some sort of trauma, a.k.a. being removed from the house. And I was just wondering if IMPD also trains their officers to kind of look for those, look for the different symptoms that these children might see that's not what you would see in a quote-unquote normal household.
Thanks very much for the call and the question. Chief Cunningham, I'll throw that one to you first in regards to the training.
Yeah, absolutely we do. And, you know, some of the benefit comes from the fact that law enforcement officers themselves are just people. And a variety, as you look through our own force, we have individuals that have that are foster parents, that are that have children that have autism, that, you know, we're people just like anyone else. And that helps individual officers deal with it. But in our training, and Officer Flatter can talk about this, you know, we have victim assistance units that they know that they can call as additional resources to deal with children. They're taught to identify signs of children in need, get the agencies out there that can provide support services. But I think, you know, going back to just your general question, just like your desire to become a foster parent, what we've said over and over, it's the dedication to service and the compassion in an individual that certainly we recognize the how fragile and vulnerable children are. And whenever we see them in a situation out there, an adverse situation, we certainly render aid, pay attention to that, and make sure that they're getting the appropriate assistance.
So, Officer Flatter, I guess part of the other thing that I would, I'd been thinking about with this, and I'm not sure the term has been used here, but I know when we had Troy Riggs on, we had the mayors, they would use terms like intervention, you know, which is classically, you're smiling, you know where I'm going with this. It's less about that traditional where police officers were judged by how many arrests led to conviction and all of that sort of stuff, to really how many arrests do you prevent here? How many ways can you stop a problem from escalating?
Right. And that same word I was about to use, intervention, we actually have a very intentional portion of our training. It's called crisis intervention. And what we do during that training is we look at different situations and different circumstances for both children and adults to see, you know, what are our clues of a mental illness? What are our clues that a child is in need of something more than what's in their environment? What are our clues that someone could be, you know, suffering from post-traumatic stress? And so what we do during that portion of our training is we look at, you know, first off, what do we look for? But then when we identify it, what are our resources that we can connect either the family or that individual? If in the case of the parents, what can we, what resources would we have, you know, specifically for foster parents? Who can we put them in contact with to help kind of assist in the ways that the assistance is needed? And so, you know, when you ask about our training and and some of these situations, yes, it's a very intentional, very deliberate portion of our training. Now, obviously, things change over time, but for my particular class, we spent probably cumulatively about a week and a half on it. Mm-hmm. 1 week specifically devoted to that. And then, you know, we got bits of things throughout the entire training process as well.
Do you find that satisfying or stressful or both? At the same time, because you're coming in, and I think everybody's alluded, generally when someone picks up 911, it's not a good moment. You know, people are under stress and all of that. Do you find that you know, what do you feel when you're going, dealing with that experience? And I'm throwing this to you with only about 30 seconds. I'll tell you what, why don't we save that? I'll give you a second to, a little bit of time to collect your thoughts, and we'll pick it up when we come back. If you are just joining us, we are talking about the ways that the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department is adapting officer recruitment and staffing to meet the challenges of these times. My guests are IMPD Deputy Chief Valerie Cunningham, Lieutenant Ida Williams of the recruiting unit, and Officer Elizabeth Flatter, who is a recent recruit. If you want to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimitswfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or track us down on Twitter at WFYI. I'm John Kroll. You're listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about the ways that the Indianapolis Metropolitan Police Department is adapting officer recruitment and staffing to meet the challenges of these changing times. My guests are IMPD Deputy Chief Valerie Cunningham, Lieutenant Ida Williams of the recruiting unit, and Officer Elizabeth Flatter, who is a recent recruit. So right before we went to the break, Officer Flatter, I asked you a big question about whether you find it satisfying or stressful to be dealing, you know, in some ways, you almost have to be a psychologist walking into these charged situations and try to figure out what the solution is, who needs to be called, what sort of support needs to be provided. That's a pretty specialized skill set and a broad one.
That's absolutely true. And to answer your initial question, I would say both. It is stressful and satisfying. One of the things that, in my personal experiences with people, that they seem to respond to is the fact that, you know, first and foremost, I let them know that, no, I don't understand exactly what you're going through, but what I believe can help you is, you know, X, Y, and Z, and here is why. Going through all of the training, it is a lot to remember, and it's a lot to take in, but that's why the training is set up the way that it is. That's why, you know, we had bits throughout the academy and not just, you know, all just at one time. Because like any other skill, the more that you kind of visit it, then the more that you can hone in on that skill. And we aren't necessarily required to give a diagnosis because we're not a psychologist. We're not a psychiatrist. We aren't really therapy people, even though, you know, that's kind of what we get dubbed sometimes. But what we have the ability to do then is to connect resources and to be that person, a physical individual in front of someone who is handing them physically a set of resources. And there's something so dramatically different about that than logging onto a website and reading a forum of, you know, what Joe down the street thinks may be helpful. We're someone there in person who can look them in the eye and say, we don't get it, but here's something that may help. This is how you can utilize this resource. This is who you would contact. This is what you could expect. And to be able to make that connection, I think, is key for some of the prevention that we're really going for. Because not everything is intervention. We were talking about that a little bit earlier. There's intervention, there's prevention, there's the immediate response, and they all work together to make, to one, selfishly make us successful as law enforcement officers, but to also better the community and reach out to the citizens. We have to have a good balance of all three. And so those pieces of our training and as abrupt and kind of stressful as it can be, that gives us the ability to balance that in the moment.
We've gotten an email from a listener named Sean, and again, if you want to join this conversation, you can call us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI, or you can track us down on Twitter at WFYI, or you can do what Sean has done and send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Sean writes, and this is one of the problems I suspect you have to deal with. I lived in HUD housing for 21 years. Although I personally haven't had many problems with, I have seen plenty of arrogant, abusive, and just plain awful authoritarian behavior by many IMPD officers, especially towards the mentally ill. When they are out of the public eye, and even in public eye, they earn the bad reputation they have. And my entire family is career public sector officers, including a judge. How can you misinterpret a video? And how come the cops that get shot, citizens ratio, is so much in favor of law enforcement's favor? No cops are getting a back full of bullets. So obviously that is a public perception problem that is out there right now, and I suspect is one of the things, and we've done shows about this before, frankly, where we've had officers talking about how you deal with that perception. I don't want to spend forever on it, but it's out there. We got to talk about it. I'll start with Deputy Chief Cunningham.
Yeah, there are so many well-intentioned and good law enforcement officers. I only wish that all the good acts would transcend into someone saying, all officers are good because this officer just did this good thing. Mm-hmm. But most often you hear about the tarnishing of the badge, where you have someone that acts out of the professionalism that we train to, that doesn't treat somebody with dignity and respect that they deserve, and then that applies to all of us in a broad sweep. If we could only reverse that and have it the other way, because I can assure you there are far more good actions and helpful officers out there than the bad ones. Certainly, as an administrator for a police organization, if an individual is unfairly treated within this community by any IMPD officer, I can speak on behalf of IMPD, we want to know about it. We want to address it. We want to investigate it. And certainly, if found to be sustained or true, that's not an individual that we want serving this community in that manner. We'll deal with it appropriately. So there are avenues to report police misconduct. We certainly appreciate it when that occurs because, like anyone else, we come onto this job with a true heart. We train to professionalism. If somebody falls short of that mark, we want to know and address it.
Lieutenant Williams, I saw your body language, deep sighs while this was going on and all of that. Is this a barrier to getting people to apply that perception that's out there?
It has certainly affected our hiring process. And again, like the chief said, we want to know about it. We do have processes in place that when something happens, someone can report that to us. But absolutely, as recruiters, we hear that daily, that why do I want to join the agency or the force because of whether it happened here or whether it happened in Chicago, no matter where it happens, that social media is played instantly. And so we feel it. So that is affecting us. And again, it's our job as law enforcement officers and recruiters to get that other side out, to say that's not us. And as a matter of fact, why don't you join us? Why don't you join us and again, be that voice, that positive voice, so that you can let people see that this is a noble profession.
I'm going to stay with you for a second, Lieutenant Williams, because as sort of the point person for recruiting, I would think the other way that other piece of this question would be, you know, there are, I don't think we have to single out police or law enforcement here. There are certain people who never should be in positions of authority. What are, you know, are there screens set up or screening processes set up in your recruiting to determine, okay, this really isn't a person who should be given a badge and a gun, and, you know, and the authority to make decisions about other people's lives?
Absolutely. So what happens is when a person comes through our hiring process, obviously the first step is to put in their application. They take the written exam and they take the physical exam. Once they go through certain steps, at some point in the process, they're given a conditional offer. And at that point, they're assigned a background investigator. And once they get in, assigned a background investigator, that investigator's job is to do exactly that. They dive into the background, but then again, you have your physical exams, your mental exams, your psychological exams, your polygraphs. All of those things take place when you're in that background phase of our hiring process. So as an agency, we catch a lot mm-hmm. in that phase. And so to your question, are there some folks that should not be? Absolutely. And again, that's where that is caught. So there's a lot of things that come out when an applicant is in that background phase that is revealed through that process. That is the longest process of our hiring phase, is when they're in the background phase. So that's a good 5-month process right there to make sure that we're getting the best applicants that we can get.
What are some of the disqualifiers? Like, would domestic violence, a history of domestic violence, be a disqualifier? Is drug abuse a disqualifier?
Absolutely.
Okay. What are some of the other ones?
So again, felony convictions, mm-hmm. can be a disqualifier. Again, domestic you mentioned domestic battery, because again, in the state of Indiana, if you've convicted of a, even if it's a misdemeanor, domestic battery, you cannot carry a handgun. That drug abuse is certainly more recent drug abuse is definitely misqualified. But there's years in place that we tell our applicants that they cannot partake in some of that. But again, valid driver's license, you got to have a valid driver's license. You got to, if you've been in the military, you got to have an honorable discharge and not a dishonorable discharge. High school diploma or GED is something we look for. And then also being a U.S. citizen. So all of those things are some things that you have to be to meet our basic qualifications to be an officer.
Okay, so we've been spending a lot of time talking about the people you don't want right now. Let's talk about the people that you do want. Who is the ideal police recruit, the person you want to come out? I'll let you start, but I want to hear all 3 points because you come at different points in the sort of on the compass here. I'll start with Lieutenant Williams on that one.
So again, if a person goes to our website,
go ahead and list the URL. That's the reason you're here, right?
You're right. So first of all, they can put in their application if they want to join by going to joinimpd.indy.gov. And then again, if they go to our website, they will come up with all the qualifications to become a police officer, number one. So being between the ages of 21 and 36 are the applicants we're looking for. They cannot be 36, and that's because of our PERF. Mm. But if they're between the ages of 21 and 35, we want them to be in physical and mental condition, because we always focus a lot of times on the physical, but policing, that mental toughness, is also just as important. So again, we got the age requirement. Again, they got to be able to pass the physical and a written exam. Those are the people we're looking for. And earlier we talked about what are some other, well, we got our basic requirements, you know, that we talked about earlier. But also I want to go back to what we mentioned earlier. Mm-hmm. What are we looking for? We're looking for individuals that want to serve. I know it sounds a little cliche, but something other than themselves. We're looking for someone that really has the passion, that's really committed to wanting to do this job, because every day is a different day. You know, every day is something different. So we're looking for those that's going to be committed, that have the passion to do this job, that want to use their communication skills. It doesn't matter. You don't have to have prior law enforcement to do this job. It doesn't matter if you worked at Starbucks or if you worked at McDonald's or the Goodwill, because we all have come in and we're looking for someone that has some transferable skills. So someone that, again, is willing to come in and serve and be committed to this job are those individuals that we're looking for. And they're willing to put in the hard work, because it's tough to go through our training process. So we're looking for someone that want to put in the hard work and the effort to do this job.
Officer Flatter, I'm going to give you the next word and say the last word for Deputy Chief Cunningham. But I'm particularly interested because you're still kind of in the learning phase you're on the job, you said, for only a couple of months. So I imagine you're still encountering a lot of things for the first time. What qualities do you think someone coming in that you wouldn't have anticipated needs to have to be successful in the job, to do it right? Tough question.
So I'll just put this out there. I was at the older end of my recruiting class. Mm-hmm. So with that, I had almost 16 years of working experience before I ever came here. So in terms of what qualities I didn't expect to want, I had a very different vantage point coming in than, you know, what some could have. I know what it's like to work with people who don't want to work, or to work with people who are really only there because that way they can tell someone how great they are in what they do. And that's the same in this profession as in anything else. No, I can tell you, though, that when I decided in myself that this is, you know, it was time. This is what I wanted to go for. This is what I wanted to do. My thought process and all of my training, whether that was physical or mental or academic, was I trained to be the best officer and the best backup that I can be to the end of being the backup that I hope no one ever needs me to be. Mm. And I say that to say not how great my thought process is, but that the point of this is the fact that we are a team and we are here working together to help try to serve the community. And if we're not willing to put ourselves on the back burner and to put ourselves out there for the people we work with or for the people that we are serving, then you don't have a place in this job, because it's not about you. It's about everyone around you. That's one of my thoughts.
Okay. Deputy Chief Cunningham.
Yeah. So, you know, long ago, I'll go out and I'll talk to individuals that are in high school or they're trying to career path themselves where they think they want to be at that young age. And they'll say that, you know, they're going to register and take criminal justice courses. And I always encourage people, study what you love. Study what your passion is, something that you'll be dedicated to, that you'll be enthused to go in and study. I never took a criminal justice course throughout college, never anything related to it. You can be successful with your effort and your attitude. Commitment, you've heard these words over again. Commitment, dedication, discipline, effort, and attitude. One of the areas that we're recruiting heavily in is athletes. Athletes have that discipline. They work hard. They see the rewards when they work hard. They're focused. They're committed. Those are the words you're going to hear from us over and over and over. Be disciplined, focused, committed, dedicated, and have the heart of a servant. And, you know, I truly believe this job is a calling. If you do not have those characteristics and you take every criminal justice course that you can possibly take, and on paper you look like a rock star in criminal justice, if you don't have those intangible characteristics that I just mentioned, you're not going to be successful in this profession.
We are almost at the end of the time. Lieutenant Williams, you want to toss out the URL one more time if people want to apply?
Yes, absolutely. Please, please come to or join. Go to our website, joinimpd.indy.gov. Or if you want to talk to someone on the phone, you could give us a call, 317-327-IMPD.
That'll have to be the last word. I'd like to thank my guests, Deputy Chief Valerie Cunningham, Lieutenant Ida Williams, and Officer Elizabeth Flatter, for what's been a lively conversation. I am John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producers, Sarah Neal Estes, Roxana Caldwell, and Jill Sheridan. Interactive Media Coordinator, Scott McAllister. Technical Producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And Board Engineer, Joe Hatcher. Emily Matheny screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.